The Mystery of the Lost Lenore, Part 23. As I climbed aboard my camel in an attempt to outrun the approaching grass fire, on the other side of that fire, some distance away, one of my companions was trying frantically to extinguish it. This was only reasonable, since it was he who had begun the conflagration. It seems that Alvy, separated from the group as I was, found himself cold and alone some 500 or so meters west of the place that my camel and I had come finally to rest. Concerned not only for his material comfort, but about possible assaults by wild beasts less amicable than Mr. Freddy Bananas III, he had decided to start a small fire. This he succeeded in doing, but a gust of wind blew some of his burning material, a dog-eared copy of Henry Morton Stanley's How I Found Livingstone, into some grass that had miraculously remained dry despite the recent downpour, and the thing got pretty rapidly out of control. At the very moment that I was riding east, ahead of the rapidly approaching flames, Alvy was desperately trying to put out the blaze with the only fluid and hose he had to hand. Sadly, as he was fairly dehydrated, this apparatus was not cutting the mustard, and before very much time had passed, deciding that there are certain things that a man does not want to hold too close to a fire, he ceased his ad hoc firefighting foray and hightailed it on out of there. He was now, however, without any means of transport, as his camel, possessing perhaps a better grasp on the underlying physics of fire, had been a good deal quicker to beat a retreat than he. Alvy, relying solely on his own leg power, trotted off down the hill and headed eastish, all on his lonesome. North of Alvy's position, Roger and Mr. Freddy Bananas III had just stumbled upon Sammy, who, overcome by curiosity, had been heading back towards the light and smoke. Three of them conferred briefly before deciding that it would be foolish to get any closer to the fire. They also decided that it would be best to head east. As they were higher up in the hills than either Alvy or me, and their view was not as obscured by smoke, they could see a narrow stream in that direction. There, they believed the fire would stop. I have no idea where Hobie was at the time the rest of us were maneuvering around Alvy's grass fire, and I have no idea what he was doing, but he suddenly appeared before me shortly after I myself arrived on the banks of the stream. I had dismounted from my camel and was refilling my canteen when I looked up to see him, there on the other side of the stream, still mounted and looking down at me in that contemptuous way of his. I can't say that I was happy to see him, as I would have been happier to see any other member of our party, but I wasn't displeased to be no longer alone. It was dusk, and I knew that I didn't have the nerves to make it through a night alone in the middle of nowhere. Hobie and I made up a sort of camp there on the edge of the stream, and it was only moments after we sat down by our small fire, carefully surrounded by a little wall constructed of wetted stones, that Alvy wandered up. I gave him a drink from my canteen, and he told us, in a voice scratchy from dehydration and smoke, the story of his starting the fire and his attempts to douse it. Then, exhausted, we all fell asleep, thinking that maybe tomorrow we would find the others.